Welcome back to The Brandon White Show, where we have conversations worth listening to give you an edge to win in your business and your life. I'm your host, Brandon White. Here we go. Hello, friends. Welcome to the show. Today we have Dr. Chloe Carmichael, who is a psychologist from New York City, and she's got a new book out called Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. And one of the things that entrepreneurs have is usually a lot of anxiety, and making sure that that anxiety doesn't redline is key. But you don't want to kill your anxiety, because that's part of your magic. Dr. Chloe talks about how to harness that power. She gives 3 HPTs in this episode, and you're going to love it. Here we go.
Welcome to Build a Business Success Secrets, the only podcast that provides straight talk for entrepreneurs. Whether you're an entrepreneur starting with an idea or growing your business, this show is for you. We'll teach you how to build a strong mindset, powerful body, and profitable business so you can achieve success. And here's your host, Brandon C. White.
Today we are talking about nervous energy and stress with Dr. Chloe Carmichael, who has written a book recently called Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. How are you today, Chloe?
I'm great, Brandon. It's nice to be with you.
Well, thanks so much. I was interested in your book. I think as most listeners here are small business owners and entrepreneurs, they probably are intimately familiar with what you've studied and maybe even harness that anxiety and nervous energy in positive ways. But before we get started, I always like to learn how you got started as a psychologist, because my understanding is that you were actually a yoga teacher who transitioned her life into a psychology practice.
That's true. And then I actually also transitioned into being an entrepreneur. So I'm a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization, where there's a minimum of $1 million a year in annual revenue required to join. So I was really excited to come and share on your show. But we can definitely start way back when. It was probably 20 years ago at this point that I was a yoga teacher in New York City, which was awesome. It was a great experience. I was teaching privately. I actually tell this story as well in my book, where private, you know, yoga lessons in New York City are usually paid for by pretty high functioning driven people. So there I was giving these private yoga lessons to high functioning driven New Yorkers, and they wanted customized yoga programs that would really dovetail in terms of what we were doing with the physical postures and the meditation. So they would say, look, I want to improve my balance mentally as well as physically. And so I would find that by creating customized yoga and meditation programs for them, I was getting really into the mental side and what they were experiencing on the mental side, which is what prompted me to get my PhD in clinical psychology. And from there, to start building a business. And I didn't know I was going to end up hiring other therapists and appearing on TV and writing books, but everything just caught fire from there.
So how, I'm curious, because most people in New York City are hard chargers, and I'm sure that you've experienced many of them. So was that hard to get a Wall Street person or someone like that to calm down and actually do your yoga practice and do the meditation and things like that?
Honestly, it wasn't for me. So one of the things that people have said about me, and I think this might have to do with why, you know, the nervous energy, the title of my book being Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety, is that maybe it is the yoga background, but there's something for me about, I'm a hard charging person, but I'm also a person that has a deep calm. And so I was just able to share that with people pretty naturally.
So what, I'm going to go back one more step. What drew you to yoga yourself as a person?
Interesting question, Brandon. So it's in the book as well. I won't tell the whole story because I know we only have a limited time. But I actually had, and I, you know, share this in the book, it often surprises people to know that I actually had a pretty troubled childhood. People meet me today and they kind of see, oh, Dr. Chloe, really polished and successful. In my teens, I really wasn't that way. I had a pretty rough start. I had a boyfriend that he's actually dead now. I share the story in the book. At the time, he was a drug abuser. And as a teenager, I was kind of a codependent person. And through yoga, it actually taught me how to control myself. And the way I got into it is when I was 17, I just saw an ad for a free yoga class in a newspaper and just wandered in and gave it a try. Discovered that just being a naturally flexible person, I had finally found a sport I was good at. It's kind of the way I read. It's not a sport, but a physical activity that I just was good at. And I just started going all the time, went from there.
Well, I think that's interesting. I appreciate you sharing that, because as a fellow person with a master's in psych, I think I got my master's as well for self. I think it was cheaper if you get your master's or your PhD, right? And then you can counsel yourself.
Well, I mean, you know, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I know you're kidding, but it's true. I think that the process of learning all of these techniques is one that provokes a lot of reflection and growth. And not to keep talking about my book, but I do actually also share a lot of stories in the book about, even to this day, how I use the techniques on myself as well. So definitely, I think we have to drink our own Kool-Aid.
I think that's true. I think that's true of most humans. I actually want to ask you a question, because I know you summarized your background, but you are the first American to ever be, or I don't know if I'm going to get this right, so you can correct me, ordained or given
I studied with the first American, with Dr. Robert Tenzin Thurman, who is the first American to be ordained, within the Tibetan, Buddhism. I am not ordained in any kind of, anything. It just says in my bio that I studied with Dr. Robert Tenzin Thurman, actually as a student at Columbia. He taught an entire course there on Buddhism. And so I draw a lot from those types of techniques.
And do you incorporate Buddhism into your practice now with elements of that?
I do. For me, one of the most interesting things that, people often find fascinating with mindfulness, which I think has become such a buzzword that many people just don't even know, what it really means anymore. But I think of mindfulness as metacognition, the ability to be thinking about your thoughts, to have a 30,000 foot view of your thoughts. And so there are 9 techniques in my book. And I explain at the beginning, it's like a cookbook. You don't have to do them in order. Do whichever recipe appeals to you. With the exception of, I do encourage people to do the first technique first, which is a mindfulness technique. And I explain in the book that although it looks like a breathing technique, the way it's done is a mindfulness technique to promote metacognition. And what's very interesting is that in Buddhism, there are 3 levels of mindfulness. We start by being mindful of an object. Then we graduate to being mindful of a semi-tangible object like our breath. And that trains us for the skills to be mindful of abstract objects like thoughts and emotions. So that's something, of course, that's been in Buddhism for thousands of years. But now we have places like the Harvard Medical School and many other places that have entire centers devoted to mindfulness, because we now know it's true, even through science, that by practicing those types of techniques the right way, we will build our metacognition skills.
And just for the listeners out there who may not be familiar with metacognition, what is that's really the process of?
Well, so if we break it down a little bit, meta meaning, kind of that overall level, right? So thinking about something, in the broader scale. And then cognition is just a psychology word for thoughts, right? So it's the ability to think about your thoughts. I put it in terms of thinking about it like a 30,000 foot view of your thoughts. Or if you've ever seen, the art style of pointillism, where it's like a bunch of tiny little dots, and that's all it looks like when you're up close, but then you back up and you see all those tiny little dots accrue into a pattern or a picture. When we have our metacognition skills, we can do the same thing. So for example, if I'm feeling timid about giving an employee a correction, if I have good metacognition skills, I can say, okay, well, is this because I'm timid in general? Or is it because this particular employee intimidates me? Or is it because, you know, I'm particularly nervous about some other issue, right? That's where that metacognition could come into play for a business owner.
This episode is sponsored by the Halle Financial Team at Expert Lending. Buying a house in today's market is competitive, and you need a lender that can close fast and get you the very best rate. The team is licensed in 48 states and has over 20 years experience in the real estate and lending space, and access to lending rates that most mortgage brokers can't get. I know, because I'm an investor in the team. If you need a mortgage or know someone that does, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086 and talk to a real human who will give you the customer service you deserve. Again, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086. Now back to the show. Well, thanks for explaining that. I think that I agree with you that the mindfulness, movement out there seems to be this thing that there's a lot of people out there possibly promoting it that don't actually know how to teach it or what it really means. So I think it's important for people really to go and understand who they're learning from so that they're not learning some crazy technique that may or may not work.
Oh, that is so true, I have to say, Brandon. So, I mean, one of the things that drives me nuts when people hear about mindfulness or anxiety management is they say, oh, yeah, that's when you just like take a deep breath and let it go. And I'm like, not really, because there are certain times when we're anxious, when taking a big breath and letting it go is like the right thing to do. There are other times when we're anxious that taking a big breath and letting it go is the wrong thing to do. Again, like if I were anxious about giving that employee a big correction, if I just took a big breath and let it go, I could be missing out on some important information. Like maybe this employee has got a real attitude problem and that's why I'm anxious. That's not something I should let go of. That's something I should pay attention to. So we don't always want to take a deep breath and let it go. If anyone thinks that's what mindfulness is, that's actually the opposite of metacognition. So I'm really into, as you said, helping people understand mindfulness on a, I think, a more sophisticated level than the idea of just, you know, taking a deep breath or being present in the moment or, you know, any of the other, you know, frankly, platitudes that a lot of, you know, people will, you know, put on a little piece of artwork and, you know, stick up somewhere. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to bring that message.
Well, I appreciate you explaining that because I think we did it in a very nice way for people to understand. So let's talk a little bit about anxiety and business owners, because I know in your book, and you've talked about this, and I'd love to share with our audience how you balance or how you see, you've worked with so many people, the balance between anxiety becoming something that decreases your function. I mean, it can go to a tipping point. And I'm saying that from my own experience. So can you talk a little bit about how that balances? I know you talk about 9 things in your book. I want to talk about a few. We're not going to give them all away, because if you're listening to this, you should be buying the book and getting Dr. Chloe's recipe book and pick one for yourself. But the I don't know really how to explain it, but how do you see, based on all of your experience with all of your clients, that how to keep that balance? Because entrepreneurs do, I was reading your book, I was thinking I could never do away, and I know you're not saying that, but if I gave away a lot of this crazy energy, then the magic might not happen.
Right. So I agree 100%. So you're touching on a couple of interesting things. So I think one thing that you're getting at, Brandon, if I understand you correctly, is that a lot of entrepreneurs, as well as artists or, you know, just driven people, they do have an edge, and they can sometimes get into a really intense mood that actually is the fuel for a lot of the positive things that they do. And they're afraid that if they tame that intensity, that they will, you know, almost castrate themselves on a certain level. Is that what you're saying?
That's basically what I'm saying. So, you know, it's this, it's this ability to manage that. If you think about it as a tachometer or something, you can't go into the red line, but you can't go down too low, because if you go too low, it doesn't happen. So you've got to sort of moderate it. And I'm not sure that all entrepreneurs, including myself, are really that good at moderating or figure that out. So what sort of techniques do you teach people to be able to do that? Because the intensity is definitely something that can be overwhelming for other people and could cause negative consequences.
Yeah, definitely. So a few thoughts on that. One is, as you said, you don't want to waste that energy, right? So the healthy function of anxiety is actually to stimulate preparation behaviors. So if people are getting that, you know, kind of edge and they are channeling it into doing and building and creating, great. You know, you probably don't even need my help. But what a lot of people do as you said, they waste it, is maybe they'll get anxious about being anxious, right? So in that example of being anxious about giving feedback to an employee, they will then suddenly say, well, why am I so anxious? And then they'll become really self-critical of, I've just got to stop being so anxious. I've got to stop being stuck in fear, you know, and they'll waste all of that energy on self-criticism or anxiety about the anxiety, instead of channeling that energy into the place it should be going, which is, again, to maybe say, well, let me, you know, list out, you know, five reasons why I feel anxious about giving this particular employee feedback, or, you know, what are five other things that are going on in my life at this moment that could be making me feel this way, right? So that's how we would use the anxiety productively. But also, to your point about the red line, I actually shared a story in the book about how I used the breathing technique in that first chapter, about where I was on the Nancy Grace show, a nationwide TV show about brutal, ugly crimes, in case anyone doesn't know it. It's not really my scene, but I don't usually say no to national TV exposure. So there I was on, you know, the Nancy Grace show, supposed to be providing comment, you know, about some gruesome crime. And it was one of my first times on national TV, and I mispronounced a word. And for me, especially as, you know, kind of an academic person and being on national TV, it made me really nervous when I realized I had mispronounced a word. And I started getting into that red line. I started trying to figure out how to say the word a different way. It was just compounding on itself. And I started to go into that real red line zone and having an actual, you know, panic attack. My face started like twitching for a second. It was awful. But thank goodness what I did, and I mean, I make it sound like it lasted forever, but the whole thing was like 3 seconds. I watched the clip. It was just like, I just had this little freak out. And then you can see on the clip, I do this quick little breath, and then I just come right back to life and, you know, start behaving normally again. So to your point again about going into that red line, we need first the awareness to know when we're going into the red line. And then we need to learn how to remain calm and not freak out about why we're in the red line, to understand why we are getting there and to keep our wits about us. When we get anxious, when we get really anxious, Mother Nature often will actually narrow our focus, not only our cognitive focus. So again, all I could think about was that mispronounced word, but even oftentimes our visual focus, our peripheral vision will actually even decrease. But when we have really good mindfulness skills and we realize we're getting into the red zone, we are more able to pull ourselves out of it and get ourselves back into the good, healthy problem-solving zone.
Do you work with your clients to actually practice that? Because I found that you can talk about it, you can read it, you can, I don't know, say it to yourself that I'm going to do this. But when you find yourself in that moment, it can be tough to do what you did, which is to realize it, right? It's really about that awareness.
Definitely. So one of the things I do say in the book is that we don't want to practice at the game, right? So learning to just do a couple minutes of that, you know, little technique every day is great. And by the way, people can see me doing that technique on video for free. If they go to nervousenergybook.com, I just like lead people through that. You have to give your email and then you get a video of me leading you through that technique. But to your point also about practicing, Brandon, there's a technique I also describe in the book, which is called the toggle technique, like a toggle button. You toggle in and out of something. And that's one that I, you know, use in the context of a different technique. But the concept, what you're describing of toggling, I think works in many situations. So we practice getting ourselves a little worked up or a little angry or a little timid or, you know, whatever you know is your personal red zone. And then we toggle out of it. We do that breathing technique or whatever technique in the book we know is the right one to help us toggle out of it. And then we toggle back into it and out of it. And practicing in a low stakes environment, like where there's no actual emergency, does build our muscles, our executive lobe function, those neural pathways. We're literally building things in our brain when we do that practice.
Well, thanks for sharing that. Again, you have 9 recipes in your book. We talked about the toggling. Can you share 2 other ones for our listeners that you think are applicable, most applicable, I should say. I know they're all applicable, but most applicable and helpful for entrepreneurs out there who are building businesses and putting their head on the pillow at night, worrying about payroll that they've got to make that next Friday and all the craziness of the COVID stuff that we've had and challenges there.
Yes, absolutely. So in the book, I actually describe, I give these little examples of people. And one of them actually is an entrepreneur. And in the book, his name is Steven. Of course, I anonymized all of the examples for confidentiality reasons. But in the book, you know, the person's name is Steven. And so Steven had a big meeting coming up. He was going to sell some clients on a big deal, really excited. And he just kept preparing, kept thinking about it. And up to a certain point, that was good. He had a tenacious mind. It was locked on this topic, and that was great. But then he hit a wall where any more preparation was going to be overkill. He kept wanting to reach out to the client to stimulate them with one more thing. He knew he was just getting annoying, right? But yet all he could do was keep thinking about this thing. It was like his mind was stuck in a groove. So we used a technique that I did put in my book called your new mental shortlist. He just needed a new mental shortlist. His mind had developed a habit of auto-tracking onto this topic. And again, actually intelligent, high-functioning people, in order to save energy and be efficient, our minds will do that. We'll develop habits. His mind had a habit of thinking about this meeting, which was a good habit until it wasn't. A good way to change that so that you don't get into the like, don't think about pink elephants thing when you're just reinforcing that topic. With the new mental shortlist, what we do is we think of 5 good topics that we know would be much better for us to be thinking about. It can be, in fact, it should be, I think, a variety of domains in your life. So it could be anything from, you know, your birthday and holiday shopping. He would also, one of his topics was to surf his competitors' websites and see what they were up to. Another one of his topics was to think about certain employees that he needed to write a thank you card to recognize the good stuff that they had done. So the idea is that you come up with 5 topics that will be better for you to pivot onto. And then you must write them down, because remember I said that when we get anxious, our ability to, you know, see the bigger picture actually decreases. So you just write out those 5 topics for yourself. And then when you feel tempted to go on to the old topic and what psychology we call ruminating, then you, it'll be much easier to get yourself off the topic if you have 5 good topics to go on to. And sometimes people say, well, but Dr. Chloe, what if I can't think of 5 good topics? And I'm like, well, then you really need to do this exercise, because if you can't think of 5 good topics, even in a calm state of mind, how are you ever going to get off that topic, you know, in a moment when you're all worked up? So the new mental shortlist is one technique I would definitely recommend for entrepreneurs, including myself.
I think that's great. One thing that I do as I'm looking at the camera, if you're watching this on YouTube, is I put the note card taped right to the camera so that I don't forget, because otherwise I'll be looking at my note, or it'll be on my desk, or in an interview where you're on live TV or something, you don't have that luxury. So putting it in front of you somewhere, at least, I think is helpful. How about another one? We've got the toggle, the five other things to think about, and...
Sure. Another one is called thought replacement. So, just to stay with the same example of, you know, supposing that you're really nervous about giving an employee feedback. And let's suppose that you've done that metacognition exercise and you've realized that the reason why you're nervous about giving the employee feedback is because you have a misguided belief that giving people criticism is mean and isn't going to make them, you know, isn't good for them. It's just going to hold them back. And so you have this automatic thought that giving, you know, negative feedback is always a bad thing and is going to make you the bad guy, right? So what we would do in that case is we would come up with a good, powerful thought replacement for you to use when you go into that type of situation. And here's an example. So I had an entrepreneur that had that, you know, same dynamic. And what he did is he learned about a situation from the Army where some kind of a commander in the field back in Vietnam had a troop of many, many soldiers, and they had to dig these little foxholes to sleep in every night. And it was long and annoying because it was hot weather. And so one day they'd been working hard all day, and he decided to be nice. And he said, "Guys, you don't have to dig those foxholes tonight. It's fine. You can just sleep in the cots." That night, the enemy struck. 75% of his troops lost their lives. And so his thought replacement was, "I don't want to kill people with kindness," right? Don't want to kill people with kindness. Not doing people any favors to spare them the important feedback and training that they need in order to do their best job. And if they're really not cut out to work at this company, I'm not doing them any favors by, you know, not giving them the feedback that they need, right? So that's kind of a, you know, jarring example, I'll admit. But we actually want that. We want a thought replacement that's going to feel very powerful so that when we auto track onto that old script of saying, "Oh, well, I want to be nice. Let me just be nice to my employees," to remember, well, actually, it's not really super nice to deprive people of feedback that they need or to keep them in a role that they're not really fit to fill.
Well, that's a great story. Again, I'm trying to think of how do you apply this. So do you practice, do you teach people to practice this thought replacement just over and over and over again in a visualization type technique? Or how does that manifest itself into that reality for a person?
Yeah, well, what we would do is we would write the thought replacement down. And I want people to have it memorized to the point, like if I woke you up at 3 a.m, you could tell me the alphabet, right? I want you to have your thought replacement memorized in that same way, to the point where I can say, how many words are in your thought replacement sentence? You know what I mean? Like, I want you to literally just know it cold. And the act of even just committing it to memory with that type of a level is one good way of processing it. So sometimes people will even program random reminders into their phone to pop up. And what is my thought replacement, right? To just call it up for themselves. And then certainly, if you know that, you know, you have a meeting at 3 o'clock with, you know, Sam to give him that feedback, you would obviously, you know, certainly if you were doing it on Zoom, maybe even have that little post-it up on your computer to make sure that you had that thought replacement front of mind for yourself before that big meeting.
Well, that's really helpful. Thanks for sharing that. So we've covered three of your recipes in your book. I encourage everybody to buy the book to get the other six and some other great stories. Before we wrap up, can you share something that's surprising about anxiety that you've learned from studying it?
Yes, I would kind of end where we started, which is to say that anxiety has a healthy function. It is not the enemy, right? So many people come to my office and they say, "Dr. Chloe, teach me how to get rid of my anxiety." And I'm like, no, that wouldn't actually be doing you any favors, right? That's almost like an anorexic who says, "Teach me how to get rid of all my body fat." We want them to understand that body fat actually has a very healthy function. And so does anxiety. The goal is not to get rid of it, but to recognize that it's actually a source of nervous energy. So I would also just share one more thing, which is that I also have a video called Dr. Chloe's Top Tips for Entrepreneurs. And so if anybody listening here wants to find me on social media and DM me, I will send you a free access to that. And if you do decide to get my book and leave me a nice review on Amazon and send me a screenshot of that, I'll make sure to give you a special thank you as well.
Well, that's great. Where is the best place for people to find you and purchase your book?
Sure. Well, the book is available, you know, everywhere, including Amazon, and it's, you know, ebook, hardcover, as well as Audible, because as a psychologist, I really think sometimes we need to hear someone talking about stuff to get us excited about things. So certainly Amazon, Barnes and Noble, really anywhere books are sold. NervousEnergyBook.com is going to have all the links to all my social medias and everything else. So NervousEnergyBook.com is probably just the easiest thing to remember.
Well, that's great. We'll put everything in the show notes. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule to join us today, Dr. Chloe. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brandon. The pleasure was truly mine. Thanks for spending the time.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing everything from your book, and I think that this will be great. We'll put everything in the show notes. Did your assistant, do you know, get the form filled? Yeah, the form filled.
I'm sure
out.
She did. Yeah, she's good at admin.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, thanks so much. We'll send you a follow up. It sounds like your admin keeps everything straight with links and promotional stuff and everything like that. So you'll have it and you can share it if you like. Otherwise, we post it everywhere on the internet. We've got an email list of about 18,000 people. We go into
fabulous.
About 80,000 homes on Comcast TV. So we'll give you as much exposure as we can.
Well, thank you, Brandon. That is really wonderful. And, you know, I will, if you're interested, I'll be happy to share that Top Tips for Entrepreneurs video with you. If you ever, you know, want to connect again, I'd love to come back and talk about various topics that affect entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Most of our listeners are small, medium-sized business owners and some entrepreneurs who want to get started, although I'm trying to shift it to more my person who's has a company or has some exits already. I will write something in our newsletter about you. We have a newsletter that costs $1,000 a year. It goes out once a month and it's only in print. So you can't get any of the content digitally, but I'll make sure that you get a copy because in that form, it was supposed to have your address. So we'll send you that when it comes out as well.
Wonderful, Brandon. I really appreciate that. And how did you get on Comcast?
Well, actually, I'm not. I appear, which I'm sure I know you've appeared on many shows because I watched all your clips. So you may not be aware, but I actually ran the largest social networking site for sport fishermen on the internet. I used to be on ESPN. I'm the entrepreneur who made a bunch of money and was in a niche that not a lot of people know about, but I'm connected in that sense. So right now we're in about 80,000 homes. We go into it and we have a good show. It's at 7 o'clock on Friday nights. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of channels, but, and then we're working on three other deals. So I used to also teach for the guys on Shark Tank and all that stuff. So, I don't know. I network, Dr. Coy.
Well, that's awesome. What do you mean you taught the guys on Shark Tank?
So so Damon John and Robert Helvochek actually have students. And I teach how to build a business plan and pitch deck in 13 slides. And I taught their students for 5 years. And Grant Cardone, who's like Mr. Real Estate guy on the internet. So I taught them all their students for 5 years.
Wow, that is awesome, Brandon. You know, it's just kind of reminding me as well, just thinking about, you know, areas where we might, you know, have a connection, a point of overlap is one of the things I talk about in the video of my top tips for entrepreneurs, which I understand you may or may not have time to watch. So I'll just tell you.
I will watch it.
Well, one of the things I talk about that could be interesting, you know, for your audience also is entrepreneurs and their family relationships, you know, and kind of how to bridge those gaps and make sure that your family is in line and on board and understanding, you know, what you're doing. Because I know that that can also be a big point of stress for many entrepreneurs. So I'll definitely send you the video. And thank you for sharing with me about all of these activities. I'm just looking at my notes I was writing. You, it sounds like you're doing all kinds of amazing stuff.
Well, I don't know if it's amazing, but to your point, I do want to watch the video. I actually watched all your videos. I watched your like impromptu on Instagram, which I would say that I'm pretty good at social media. I started in 1996. I would encourage you to do more of those. I know that you like, I heard you like to do the planned and production, but you'll get a lot of followers if you just do your impromptu things like that. Like that was the real you.
Which impromptu? When do you mean?
Well, you did one on Instagram when you were talking about your book. You were featured in Women's.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah,
like that was the real you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people will resonate with. I know the production pieces are good. The reason that I've been successful, especially with our podcast, in such a short amount of time, is mainly because I make mistakes and do that stuff. And you have a good story. You have a good personality. So I encourage you for what it's worth.
No, that's huge. Honestly, that would be like a huge relief to me. Like it's so much effort, as I'm sure you know, to like put everything together. So thinking about just doing it like a little bit less formally would actually be liberating.
I mean, if you want to see how, I'm not a movie star or anything like that, but you know, I am well known in some of the entrepreneur circles, and I was a venture capitalist. And I mean, I was an early guy at America Online. I say original, but early guy at America Online. But whatchamacallit? Like I do things in my pajamas. I'm not suggesting you do that, but that day that you did that piece, you didn't have all your makeup on. You were like, I'm a real person. I got a book. I'm proud of my book. And I bet you got a really good response from that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, probably I did. But I mean, honestly, I'm so busy doing all these like super produced things that it's hard to even tell. So I'll give it a try, Brandon. And I'll tag you and say you suggested it.
Do it. I encourage it. So, and on the family thing, I definitely will watch it mainly because I teach mind, body, and business. And the one thing that I say in all of my podcasts is the most important part of your team is your partner. And I couldn't have done two companies and tried 20 other ones in 20 years without my wife. So that's really important. So that'll be great to have that. And I'll definitely share it.
Well, yeah, that also sounds like a very interesting conversation for us to have potentially, just, you know, learning about that story and talking about, you know, how entrepreneurs can have a good partnership. So that sounds great. Very interesting.
Cool. We'll connect again. I try to keep the space of repeat guests, you know, at least a few months. So, but we'll definitely have you back later this year or early next year for sure.
All right. Well, Brandon, thanks again. And I appreciate the advice on social media. Any other tips? I welcome them.
No, you're great. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Thanks for being generous with your time and joining us for this episode of Build a Business Success Secrets. Before we go, let me ask you a quick question. Are you the type of person who wants to get 100% out of your time, talent, and ideas? If so, you'll love our monthly Build a Business Success Secrets newsletter. It's a monthly playbook about the inner game of building a successful business. Recent issues have shown how to avoid losing money on Facebook and Instagram paid ads with this science-backed strategy. How to build a pitch deck to raise money in 13 simple slides. 3 tips the monks use to improve concentration and get more done in less time. A 5-step process to survive and thrive when things get tough. How to optimize your sales team to grow your revenue. And tons of other actionable, high-percentage mind, body, and business-building tips and tricks. As a fellow entrepreneur who's aiming for nothing short of success, you owe it to yourself to subscribe. Check out the special offer with bonuses for you at besuccesssecrets.com. That's B as in business, businesssuccesssecrets.com. And until the next episode, remember, you are just one business plan away. I'm rooting for your success.